Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. I was listening to our guest on Republic Broadcasting Network this evening, which is, by the way, we always do a date stamp here, so on... Actually, he appeared on March the 2nd. Can you believe it? We're already in March of 2009. March the 2nd, 2009 on the West Coast, and March the 3rd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. Our guest interviewed a very interesting gentleman by the name of Stephen Wallace, who is a former police officer and a current EMS technician who went to the Buffalo plane crash site. I should say, actually, it was in Clarence Center, New York, outside of Buffalo. The crash that occurred on the night of the 12th and the 13th, the morning of the 13th of February. And interestingly, he was able to get some film and talk to some people, and we're going to talk about what he had to say. Amongst some other things, there's quite a lot of information coming out about 9/11 right now. And, of course, you know, on this show and some others, I've been both as a guest and a host, been talking to people about the fact that there's a lot of hanky-panky going on with the original film. And the films are being analyzed by some really great videographers, but people who, like me, are looking very closely. I've also been looking at the still photographs that Barack Obama and his clan have put out, and I can tell you that those are totally fictitious, fabricated, mockery of photography photos. I don't know how else to say it without saying something I'll regret, and I'm speaking about cleanliness of language. So I'll leave it at that. and we're going to talk about phony photography, phony stories, phony witnesses, and the scams behind these numerous plane crashes, which seem to be increasing with frequency almost by the day now. They don't even wait a year. We've had three plane crashes within this span of a month, and actually there were one or two that occurred in Europe this past week, so actually it's more than that. Anyway, our guest is an author, a researcher, and when I say an author, he's very prolific. He's written books on health, he's written books on food supplements, on your immune system. One particular book, The Cure is in the Cupboard, is very interesting reading. He's also written a book on 9/11 called Wrongly Blamed, and he has written some other books that have become my favorites, The Secret Scripture, and also The Magnificent Message. Part 2, I understand, now is out. It was being printed the last time he was on the show. I welcome again to Evident Footprints my good friend, Dr. Qasem Khalil.
My friend. Hello. Great to be back. Yeah.
Nice to have you.
Yeah, thank you. We're talking about Photoshop 911, huh?
Yeah.
You know, well, not Fahrenheit, you know, because it wasn't any much Fahrenheit. It was all concussive bombs. Jeepers.
Yeah. You know, we've been getting email from some folks who are really paying attention to the research that you're doing and the interviews you're conducting. Mm-hmm. And there are always these people that come out of the woodwork, these experts. And one email I got from a friend by the name of David, actually references such a tirade against the people that are telling the truth. They always attack the person bringing the message out, don't they?
Yeah, they do that, and then they try to make you out with these silly things, tinfoil hat, whatever. This is all pre-planned to character assassination, which is, you have to expect it. We saw that with the Jesus Christ, we saw it with the Prophet Muhammad, we saw it to a degree with Moses, that, you know, you get this lunging attack, and this is just a tactic to see if they can undermine the individual in front of other people, but that particular interesting thing he kept talking about the pancake, you know. What pancake? When that earthquake occurred in Turkey a few years ago, things pancaked. Did the World Trade Center pancake? I mean, what are you talking about? So there's desperation. This is just a desperation from the educational institutions. I'm sure a Zionist agent of some kind, and it's almost not even worth responding to when I saw it. It's ridiculous.
Yes,
so,
I know.
I mean, it's obvious what happened. Charges were placed by the criminals. And they blew the thing to shreds. And then you have Beverly Eckert's plane that just drops out of the sky, essentially. How's that going to happen?
Yes, and they know in terms of film and photographs, people look. You know, they love to sit and watch somebody read a book or tell a story. You know, the visual representations.
Sure.
And everything is so much related to what we see that they can just present something and you think to yourself, well, I saw it, so it must be real.
Right. Okay. Right. And since there wasn't much to see with Flight 3047, the one in which Eckert and Alison DeForge and some of the other, in a sense, of course, we don't even have to name just too many. But there wasn't too much to see, but the guy was on scene, and we'll see his photographs soon, Mr. Wallace. But what there was a lot said. For example, ice. For example, ice on the cockpit. You know, and they're talking about this. We're talking about 8 to 10 hours into this poor, pitiful crash. They're icing it all up. And so, unfortunately, what happens is if they can't give you pictures and Photoshop you, then they hit you with officials said, insiders said, State Department insiders, this type of thing.
Evidence shows.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Even, you know, if the media had it right, why did the NTSB even go there?
And NTSB guy was arguing with them to whatever degree that was posturing, I don't know, but he kept saying that you can't make that conclusion that quickly. And so that we know that the Jewish press, all owned by the Jewish powers, was really pushing this ICE thing. Now, that contradicts everything that happened. So that means that they were in on this criminal act. You can't conclude otherwise. You know, our high and mighty His Excellency CBS and His Excellency NBC seems to be the king and another king at the three big networks and Fox News, each of them lord and master. And, you know, we're not saying that, you know, that you're always wrong, but in this case, why were you talking about a theory that, you know, was your theory? It wasn't NTSB's theory. It wasn't even the FBI's theory. It was strictly a media proclamation. What are you doing that for?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And these attacks now, I find it interesting. You pointed out that there was a piece via AOL today that came out where now they're calling people who are questioning Barack Obama's legitimacy. And here we have a guy whose documentation is totally fraudulent. And I've been examining the photographs, and I've determined they're fraudulent.
Yes,
I can't.
You have.
You've seen those photographs.
Oh, yes, you have. Everything you've shown me is phonier than a you-know-who.
Phonier than a Federal Reserve note, right?
Yeah, very exactly. Well, especially that phony showing the old man sitting on the park bench when it's he's not sitting on any kind of a park bench. He just extracted the old tiger from something. And the old lady's sitting way over there, and they're kind of fuzzy. And then they just photoshopped Obama into the thing, and into the bench.
Yeah, they put him in there, and then they put half of their clothes back on, didn't they? Could you see that?
Well, this is what you observed, and this is it. And then they also put his hand, they photoshopped a hand over Obama's shoulder to make it look, to make it look like grandfatherly love or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm afraid in the case of the Eckert crime and the DeForge's crime scene, this was bulldozed, as we heard tonight. They took the dozers and the unloaders and scraped it all up and dumped it into dump trucks.
Oh.
Reminiscent of 911, you see.
Yeah.
They scraped it up.
Now, I wonder if they cleaned up any nuclear material.
Well, you never know. Obviously, there were not many body parts. Those people were thoroughly... He had expected to see a little more traditional crash scene where the plane impacts the ground. He wasn't that high up, 2,000 feet or 1,000 feet. And so they expected to see more recognizable body parts, but that was not the case here.
Mm-hmm.
And that fuselage was turned into nothing. So mm-hmm. you can't rule out these types of an item that would leave a residue, nor can you rule out the fact that the explosive residues had to be cleaned up of any kind. So one has to think explosives first. There are people who talk about lasers and EMF devices, and those are there, and those can do damage, and they do damage. But the fact that they scrubbed the area, as we had a caller call earlier on, then obviously they did, makes one suspicious that there was some kind of a residue that would be detected.
Now, I mean, it really doesn't matter what weapon they used.
Actually,
the ice gremlins did not say, oh, Beverly Eckert's on a plane, let's go get her.
And I'm not trying to make light of it. It does not matter. It's true, because what does matter is the coercion by AOL and Yahoo, as well as the major networks, to try to get us to believe in the ice parade, mm-hmm. or the ice charade, or the ice whatever,
mm-hmm.
and to get everybody theorizing about how the pilot didn't handle that ice very well, so that no one from Bombardier or from an expert could come and say, well, wait a minute, a Dash 8 doesn't fall out of the sky like they did when John F. Kennedy Jr. I mean, they killed John F. Kennedy Jr. I mean, I don't know what they did to that plane, but they blew it up. And mm-hmm. that came straight out of the sky, too,
Yeah. Well, now, I got to listen to the interview, and it was amazing, the clarity. In fact, I had mentioned to you that I had seen the video footage of Stephen Wallace's interview, which they weren't playing on the mainstream. I found that online, actually. And that would be good to
make available to your listeners or something.
Yeah. We should do that. I'm going to see if I can get BBS to post that as well.
Yeah, that would be good.
I did save the video. So here you have a description which is totally different from every other witness they interviewed, with the exception of, the Trujillo girl, we'll say.
Oh, the Trujillo, yeah, the Tomasito Trujillo.
Yes. She described what he was describing, and he described more than what anyone else did. In fact, in the interview, he described that there was another building, another house taken out, and also a garage.
Was it Tony Tatro that also mentioned that, or was someone else? It was another individual that said that there were two houses that were taken out. And so, and the rest of the orthodoxy was hitting on the one house situation.
Yeah, it may have been that.
I don't remember.
Now, I wonder if they cleared the wreckage from the other house, too.
Well, they obviously did. I mean, I think probably the most critical thing is you just don't see dozers in airplane crash sites within 3 to 4 hours. And so, and he was quite clear on this, and that's why you were seeing that altered video, because they weren't about to show the earth-moving equipment, so they kept showing that loop that you noticed and altered that. But the most important thing is that the evidence, the crime scene was altered, and you know as well as I do that in the past they wouldn't rule out terrorism, so they would leave the crime scene unaltered until they could confirm or reject the possibility of a man-made attack. Mm-hmm. And we know that in Lockerbie. We know that with the TWA to a degree, 800. We know that with the flight in Washington, in New York City, that dropped out of the sky in, what was it, November or October of 2001, that they gathered up all the plane parts and put them in the warehouse and started inspecting them. But not here. As soon as word got out that there was suspicion of murder, they made every attempt to cover everything into cover-up.
Mm-hmm. Now, in light of the fact that we've been talking about that and 9/11, now they decided that they were going to attack the people who were exposing the numerous fraudulent activities that Obama used to take over this office, and really it wasn't so much just him doing it, but those that helped him. I mean, for crying out loud, nobody ever heard of this guy a few years ago,
right?
And he raises $1 billion.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, I've got a radio show and I can't even raise $1.
It's true. So, more people knew about you and myself and some other people who've been on the media for the last 15 years and knew about him in the last 5 years. That's very true. But now you guys are birthers. Is that what's now it's being?
Yeah, birthers. Well, we're going to call them usurpers, okay?
Yeah, well, that's for sure.
They're usurpers. They're
the ones that came up with truthers and then planers and no planers. This is all the same espionage goons.
Yes. Yes, that's quite obvious. Now, speaking, if I can shift gears just for a moment, and by all means, if you want to come back to this topic, we can do that. I've been looking at some of the passenger lists, and lo and behold, there are more people walking around.
Mm-hmm.
There are more people walking around, and the connections just mysteriously all go into real estate, building companies, or medical companies.
I guess they figure America's a big enough country that you can just come up with this and then let these people loose under an alias or maybe even to some degree the same name. But Dillard, of course, is still alive. That's a phony. Rosemary Dillard is a total phony. Total, absolute fabrication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, have you found any evidence to support the fact that she's a fabrication? Because she is.
Oh, yeah. Well, her husband's alive.
Well, there you go.
Her husband is alive and kicking.
Yeah, she said that he died when the plane went inside the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
So she's telling a lie right there because there wasn't any plane. April Gallup makes it categorically clear, this Army specialist that was injured in there, that there wasn't a plane in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite clear that there's not a plane that went into that building.
She talked about pouring bourbon on her husband's grave. See, that's another kind of espionage lead that is like some kind of a silly code or something. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what they don't mention are the aliases that these people have.
Mm.
And I don't mean just a couple. Okay, and there are pages of aliases, and I found now. You know, we were talking, and this is pertinent because we were talking about this issue of Buffalo, and I'll bring it back for a second.
Sure.
This photo that the New York photographer David Hanshew took.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I think his original story, if I'm not mistaken, what was that he who evidently woke up or something, ran out of his house, you know?
No, David Hanshew, well, he might have. He was driving, I think, really. And he heard that there was this event. And, you know, these guys get paid big money for their photographs.
Mm-hmm.
So he drove and made a U-turn and went over the median and barreled into that area underneath the South Tower and was bang, 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 shooting photos. And, you know, these guys are pretty quick with a still photo. And so they're capable of potentially capturing the exit bomb blast. And that's what he did. Now, he was on, I think, the Charlie Rose or wherever he was on. He did not indicate a plane. He was underneath, he was at the base of the South Tower. He did not ever say anything about, oh, yeah, there was a plane. He indicated explosion. And his co-photographer was more adamant about it being an explosion. But, yeah, that David Hanshew is basically a time capture of the detonator charge that went off way up high. And he shows the lateral propulsion of this. Now, somebody tried to dispute that from some institution. Maybe they sent an email to you or me, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to disparage us. You know, ridiculous, because people were blown out of that building. When that concussive charge exploded, people were ejected to their deaths. What's he talking about? Is that an airplane? You notice in his email, who was countering us, he didn't say anything about an airplane, did he?
No, he didn't. And also,
you know,
I seem to have read two different accounts of this story. It seems to me that I read an account where he I might be mistaken, but
oh, okay.
I recognize the name,
yeah.
And it seemed to me that I had looked to see if I could find something that would tell me this person's association in the media.
Yeah.
And I found an AKA. I found another name.
Oh, no doubt. I don't doubt it at all. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't doubt it at all. It's just that they do get paid for photography. So he might have been there. He might not have been accidentally there. He might have been there purposely. But for whatever reason, he had one of the few precision photographs showing the explosive charges coming out in a tubular fashion. It's blowing laterally at a 90-degree angle to the building face.
Hmm.
You know, and you see it ejecting out fire, which is what's going to happen, and then the fire is followed by smoke. You know, so
yeah.
That's a cutter charge.
Yeah. Well, I found an alias, and of course the individual. Now, one might think, okay, when you see these names, that there are multiple names around the country like that, okay, and there are certainly some names that don't list age.
Yeah.
Okay. His name, with different middle initials, and in the usual places where you notice other names appear.
Yeah.
And you know, there are thousands and thousands of cities in the United States, and these names keep popping up in the same places.
Yeah.
And you notice it when it's in places like Washington D.C. or
yeah.
Reston, Virginia, or Alexandria, or Herndon.
Oh, you would. Yeah, Herndon or
yeah.
What's the other one there? Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
You would, because you have to have an intact spy network, nests and nests of spies that can keep their brotherhood secret to be able to pull off a September 11th attack, to be able to maintain a full list of passengers since there weren't any planes, to be able to maintain media spies that would act as witnesses. And this is a considerable network after all.
Mm-hmm. Now, likewise, like I look at these people and I wonder, okay, here we have a mainstream media photographer who's basically taking credit for a photograph that may or may not be real. We don't know. for sure. But then I ask myself, why does this person have an alias, and why does he have a strange alias?
Well, that's not difficult. I mean, first of all...
Stranger than the name.
Well, first of all, the photograph is more real appearing than a lot of what we have seen, because you can see quite a lot of definition, similar to the photographs you stirred me to, the still photographs that show a lot of smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Not dark smoke, but the white smoke of explosives. So it's more realistic than the bilious puffs, big, huge, bulbous puffs of fire that looks like kerosene fire that would indicate that a plane struck. There are many of those that are suspect. And if you look at the front page of the digital photographs files, and you don't, and I can't guide you there, but you'll see that they faked a lot of black smoke coming out of the World
yeah.
Trade Center to make it look really evil. Boy, these
yeah.
are evil Arabs, you know. But the hand shoe photo, if you look at it with very carefully, it looks like a lateral explosive charge, and there are other photographs showing smaller concussive charges that were going off at different levels where the fire is coming out at a 90 degree angle to the building. So, is this photoshopped? Well, we don't know. But there are a number of photographs, his included, that show exact 90 degree, fire. Little shots of fire, in his case more
yeah.
large, coming right out of the building.
Well, yeah, you can see that in the videos, too. When that building is basically going into a free fall, you can see floor after floor after floor, these projectiles are coming
yeah,
out
no pancakes.
90
There's
degrees.
No, yeah, 90 degrees, no pancaking.
Yes.
Just cutter charges.
Yes. Now, anyone that wants to argue the physics of this, I've had scientist inventor Jim Murray on this show numerous times over the past
yeah.
2 years talking about this. And we almost talk about this on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Not that specific issue, but we talk about all of this corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And he can explain what happened. And you had Professor Stephen Jones come out and say the same thing. So,
yeah, sure.
These people are going to fight tooth and nail to perpetuate a lie. And the evidence is showing very clearly with all the analysis. And I'm talking about it now because I didn't really pay attention to it. I let everyone else sort it out.
Yeah,
and
there were plenty out there. But, I think the important thing of the hand shoe photograph is that when you look at that, you see a lateral force, and lateral means that it would be directly out at a 90 degree angle to the tower. You see that, but in some of the photography or the videography that was presented by the Jewish networks, the CBSs, the NBCs, the ABCs, and Fox, by the way, conservative Fox, that's a front, false front. They show these very bulbous, very, very much kerosene type of jetliner fire, with a lot of fireball. And that's not what we see in the Bob and Bree film, nor that photograph, nor
that's
the other
still
photographs that you steered me to, the 35 that were in that file on the net. They show, white concrete puffs, they show a lighter color smoke, and they don't show these massive fireballs, and nor did anybody in the building experience those things. There weren't the number of people that came down burnt, with third degree burns was relatively few. So that makes you wonder if they didn't Photoshop some of those to make it look so evil.
Mm-hmm.
That they hit these buildings with planes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree. Now, we can get into a contest with these people that want to try to debunk what we're saying, and they're gonna. It's inevitable that they're gonna come out and try to rebuke the truth because there's an interest in a lie. Now, I want to jump back to this issue of you know, the phony witnesses or the disappearing victims.
Yeah.
Because in some research that I've done very recently, I've beaten the 108-year-old age that you see. Actually, I think we found 114 on one and 109 on another.
In the country is that old, right?
I found an alias for one of the so-called victims of Flight 93, 144 years old.
Oh, really? How about that?
They literally put 144, age 144. Come on.
You know, that's 144. I wonder what the 4-4 means. I guess that equals 11, doesn't it?
4 times 11.
You know, it's obvious that somehow somebody's afraid that people will get wise up on all this stuff. And they are doing that.
And it
makes it a lot easier when you do these doofus things like put these aliases in at 95 and 105 and 115 and all that. But what you're finding, isn't it true, that you're finding pretty categorical evidence that some of these individuals are alive under pseudonyms or even perhaps sometimes their own names? Have you found evidence that some of them are still using the original names on the plane list?
Yeah. Well, you brought up Rosemary Dillard, her husband.
I called that number listed for him through the other, and of course, just like every time we find a number for one of these fake witnesses, it turns up no longer in existence. Every case I've called thus far has changed their phone number.
Yeah. But we have evidence. Isn't it also strange that all these people are involved in internet companies, or insurance companies, or medical companies?
And Mr. Dillard's involved with buying distressed properties for cash.
In fact, his heroic story describes that he was doing this all over the country, which the aliases and the corresponding addresses verify. That is true.
Yeah, they verify.
That's one true statement I did
find.
Well,
Dillard's alive, there's no doubt about it, with his wife phoning around about pouring bourbon on his grave. When you see, poor Beverly Eckert, every time she talked about her husband, she just started crying. And I mean, there's a big difference between her and Stephen Wallace and these phonies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get out of here. You're going to lie to us, and while you're lying to us, you're participating in the murder of your fellow citizens. Oh my God, I wouldn't want
to. No, you know, I really hope people from around the world take notice of this, because there were these weren't just Americans who were killed on 9/11 subsequently, but it seems that they had, you know, the people that were supposedly on Flight 93, and you got to, you know, folks, there was no plane, so you have to realize that now this is substantiating what we reason is you know, a deduction based on the evidence. Even the coroner that went there said there's nothing to investigate.
Yeah, Miller said that I quit being a coroner after an hour because there wasn't even a drop of blood, he said some weeks later. And, of course, there wasn't, because there was no airplane in the pit. But the other thing is that the most important thing is the place is owned by David Rockefeller and his cartel.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got David Rockefeller owning the Shanksville mine reclaim site, as well as apparently the scrapyard.
Mm-hmm.
You have, and that's through Citigroup or Citicorp, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That is Rockefeller. You have also David Rockefeller and the cabal owning the World Trade Center.
Yes.
And therefore the Port Authority, which is his subsidiary. So he's managing Shanksville, he's managing the Port Authority, and then therefore managing the World Trade Center. Now that's two out of the three sites that were struck. Then you have, well, that's three out of four because of the two trade centers. Then you have the Pentagon, which is the military-industrial complex, which is a subsidiary of the Rockefeller, King Rockefeller's regime. And, you know, we can say, we can send a message to King Rockefeller. You know, thou king, you have absolute categorical ownership of the World Trade Center. Those were attacked. You have ownership of Shanksville. That was attacked. And by proxy, through Kissinger and Zockheim, Pearl and Abrams, Schulsky and Faith, you have control over the Pentagon. So did you not decide that if you could create the image of a terror act, that is, how is it safer to use your own property? I guess it's safer. I don't know.
You know, now, you wrote Wrongly Blamed, and I know you also wrote about the London bombings. Did you talk to anyone at the BBC in the course of your research?
Well, I didn't want to end up like Mr. Jennings, you know. And
Peter Jennings? Yeah.
Well, the other Mr. Jennings, the chap that was the coordinator of the emergency management system of New York, who worked under Silverstein, who went to the BBC and said, yes, I saw bodies, or I stepped on bodies, and then he ended up dead a month later, you know.
Oh, was that Brian Jennings? Or?
It was, I don't think it was Brian Jennings. Somebody can help us. His first name is escaping me, but he was a very heavyset African-American man with bad knees, and so they kind of had to crawl through the rubble of the lobby of WT7, and he was one of the main coordinators. He was high-level coordinator for emergency management, and he said there were dead people in the lobby, mm-hmm. which makes Silverstein a mass murderer, genocidal murderer. And so he reported that to Alex Jones, whatever you call him, whatever. He reported it there, and then Dylan Avery and so forth started talking about him, and then he got threats, and then after the threats, he called Dylan Avery and them and said, you know, hold back. Then the BBC contacted him. They beat him up bad, saying, you don't know what you're talking about, that you were walking over bodies. Because he was there when all the books blew. He was stuck in the stairwell with all the explosions going off, and it took...
Now, yeah, the BBC actually had the audacity to tell him what he that he didn't know what he was talking about.
Just like they said the people didn't had it wrong about the plane. It belly flopped. It didn't, you know... that's what they did. And then shortly thereafter, he's dead, you see?
Yeah, well, they were the ones that were reporting some 24 or 25 minutes before Building 7 fell that it had already collapsed.
Sure. Well, there you go.
You recall that?
Oh, sure I do.
Of course they
did. Yeah.
The anchor in England actually reported it.
Right.
4 minutes to, or 4 or 5 minutes to 5 o'clock. And then the building was still standing, and they had like a virtual reporter standing maybe several miles away on a balcony or something, and you could see the building behind her. And she
it was her that said it, and that was even though BBC interviewer reporter said that there were bombs and not planes. There were several BBC and English people on the ground in New York who begged to differ on the plane theory. But they had to keep, you know, the disinformation campaign going. Boy, they did make a mistake, though, didn't they, by announcing that it had fallen and it was standing in the background. Wow.
Yeah.
By the way, it was Barry Jennings who was in the World Trade Center 7, that's Building 7.
Okay, Barry.
And Barry was interviewed by the BBC and showed up dead shortly thereafter.
Yeah, so
he was the one who actually found corpses, and that would put Silverstein down as a definite murder suspect. even though everybody knows he is. Yeah.
Now, the interesting fact about that report in New York, I'm speaking about the female reporter that for 10 or 15 minutes was going on about how this building had collapsed, was the language that she used.
Yeah.
Right before the building actually began falling, she was talking, and then they pulled the plug.
Oh, did they?
And yeah, it went dead. There was static, and the signal was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the video that was posted on the YouTube.
Well, what this proves is this, it was a conspiracy by World Jewry. There's no doubt about it. They own the BBC. They own the press and tabloid press in England. That it is Jewish. They also own the American press, and so they obviously had determined that these events would occur and had been participants in the plot to bomb those buildings, and therefore had prepared the methodology by which to coerce the people into believing whatever. That would have taken quite a bit of coordination. You couldn't just do that on a whim. You know? So they rehearsed this.
Yes. Now, tomorrow night I have on the show two gentlemen who I had the opportunity to interview last week, David Hawkins and Field McConnell. And they have brought forth quite a bit of information about the financial aspects of this whole thing, which ties in to all the other plane crashes that have been going on for a number of years. Mm-hmm. This has been a racket. I mean, go ahead.
This racket, is this not a racket when they know for sure they're going to take out a plane pretty much then?
Oh yeah, well, it's premeditated murder for one thing, and this is on insurance. This is the one common denominator that I see between the Buffalo crash and 9/11 is that they're pooling these people together. You see, these were all important people. Now, did they kill the people on Flight 93? I'm finding them alive.
Yeah, of course.
I've yet to find one that's actually dead.
There were not any, you know, important people on those flights either. Other than, I think, one Barbara Olson, but not that important. But I suppose important, a CNN individual. But you're dealing with people on this plane that had an active role in opposing the government systems. You're dealing with Alison DeForges. I think we have that right. And then you're dealing with the Beverly Eckert. But is there anybody else that you've analyzed on that flight? I know that there's rumor is that there was an important individual in the Defense Department that died.
There are some people in insurance, in the insurance business, in pharmaceuticals, in food companies, internet businesses, real estate, and these people were all highly insurable. There were two musicians from Chuck Mangione's band, and the thing is that these people, if they had flight insurance, and they had a particular kind of flight insurance, which is the scam that David Hawkins and Field McConnell have exposed. Mm-hmm. Sidley Austin, that not only had control of the legal documents on the patented technologies used to bring these planes down. In other words, if you're going to capitalize on insurance, you have to make sure that the plane's going to go down.
Yeah, that's right. You can't.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're running the scam according to what there were other companies, Cisco. Is involved in it as well, and KPMG. So you have three companies that are operating in concert all over the world doing this. Okay,
these, well, we do know that in 9-1-1 that the Mossad and the higher Mossad agents, which would take you all the way up to the Rockefeller cabal here in this country, our king here, and then the kings of Europe as well, Rothschild, Harriman, and of course Bronfman. Don't forget Edgar Bronfman, who's essentially the Rothschild of America and Canada. That those individuals, through their proxy Mossad agents, profiteered on 9-1-1 by stock options.
Mm-hmm.
It's really unconscionable for the average American to believe, who would not steal a piece of bubble gum, that not only would they murder those people, but that they would actually know they were going to murder them and then say, well, how can we make money on this? It's hard mm-hmm. to fathom that there could be anyone like that in existence.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you have these people who were in financial businesses. If you look at Cantor Fitzgerald, these people owned stocks. They had beneficiaries. They had insurance policies. They had all kinds of fringe benefits. And what did the government end up doing with the families? Negotiating for pittances, really, based upon how much insurance there would have been there. Because, I haven't seen what their agreements are, but it's the same sort of people being taken out on these flights.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
Okay. And it keeps leading to real estate corruption, real estate fraud, whatever you want to call it, buyouts of banks. Oh, there are investment bankers on these flights too.
Oh, on the 3047?
Oh, yes, a 3407. Yeah.
Yes, 3407. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Now the issue of the financial fraud. Exactly what is the mechanism that these two men have found that is used to create the money? And therefore, obviously, the purpose is to pocket some of that money.
Okay.
How do they go about it?
Well, the way you make money in a death is by an insurance policy and the acquisition of any wealth that may be associated with that. Let's say, for instance, they own a stock portfolio, and they've been able to keep that stock portfolio, let's say, private, or keep it unknown to other people in the family. Okay, say surviving spouses or children. I don't have the kind of mind it takes to do that, but what Mr. Hawkins and McConnell have found out is that the company that orchestrated all the patents, Sidley Austin, Michelle Robinson Obama worked for them and handled patents. Hillary Clinton and the Rose Law Firm are also involved in this. Okay? So
unbelievable.
What they do is they set up a plane, and they do this by what's called fractional ownership. Okay, Bombardier actually built the plane. It was either leased or fractionally owned between Colgan and Continental. Now Continental may just lease the plane,
right?
But they own the plane, so they have access to the plane at all times. They know because it's fractionally owned, which is a private type of ownership of sorts. It doesn't belong to an airline company. It's used by different people, mostly business people.
Mm-hmm.
So they know they're going to have people that travel a lot and make the kind of bucks that people that travel on business make. And so they're going to be heavily insured. And they see to it, especially if they know that that's going to be taken out, who knows, they insure the plane against a terrorist.
Oh, that they could insure the plane. Now, that would make a lot of sense. Now, another thing is, like you said, binding. If there were a few key people going to Buffalo, and you heard that night that a number of flights were delayed and canceled. So there was some activity in Newark, but it did not coincide with the weather on the ground. The weather was not an issue at all. So that would be curious to see exactly what happened in the Newark airport and whether or not that passenger list was altered by force, And if anybody in Newark saw anything suspicious or had anything suspicious, that behavior, because there must have been a combination of activity in Newark by Mossad and then also, you know, on the ground, the fake witnesses that you've been able to uncover as well. So somehow they put the operation together sufficiently so that they would be sure to kill her. They mm-hmm. wanted her dead and no chance that she could survive. I can tell you that much.
Mm-hmm. Now the money that backs all of these policies and contracts and derivatives and hedge funds and annuities that are attached mm-hmm. to these events goes into a pool. And this whole scam is called a tontine.
Mm.
Okay.
Is tontine associated with planes or other things?
Anything, really. Okay. Anything. They just happen to choose plane because you can select multiple victims and blame it on the weather, blame it on pilot error, blame it on a mechanical difficulty, unforeseen event.
Sure.
But they're playing all this
How exactly do they make money? I mean, one can understand how they could make money on the plane if you were, but you would have to be the actual company that makes the plane, wouldn't you? Or who else would make money on it if it was the plane? Let's start
with
that. Well,
the company that makes the plane has already sold the plane, right?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It's privately owned, so they're not flying it, like a company that would, let's say, purchase 10 Boeing aircraft. And also, Boeing is a competitor of Bombardier, too.
No doubt, and very upset with Bombardier's movement now with this Dash 8 being a fuel-efficient plane.
Yes.
And Boeing, you know, has ties to the cabal,
mm-hmm.
the world Zionist cabal.
Yes.
Now, but what everybody's probably itching to know is you have Kogan and Continental who have this plane. It's insured. It's crashed. Somebody gets money. Who gets the money for the plane?
Well, the pool exists of all the people that have invested in the plane and invested in the policies and the derivatives and the hedge funds and the annuities and whatever financial vehicles they have or instruments they have attached to it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It goes in a pool. Now, there are, let's say, 1,000 people in the pool. I'm just using an arbitrary number. Now, you take out 200 people on a plane and there are only 800 people left in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? At that rate, you only need 4 more plane crashes and it's down to a couple of people.
Yeah.
Okay? The way the tontine scam worked back in the 1600s and all the years that they've used it is that the last man standing gets all the money.
I see.
Okay. So it's crime. It's organized crime.
Organized crime.
This came out of Napoli, Italy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the area of the world where this was developed. And then we had, in the early 1920s, we had Charles Ponzi doing the schemes that resulted in the creation of this Securities and Exchange Commission.
Mm-hmm. Well, on September the 11th, for at least, I guess, 2 weeks, the Israelis were doing puts on United Airlines and also American, as well as Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, because of the proximity of their floors to the initial bomb blasts.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, about $5 million that's never been picked up. Once people started saying there were puts, they bet on drop in stock price, and then that money's still sitting there, you know. So they were making these schemes, I guess making the money right away, apparently, and then waltzing in and what, collecting it? I don't know how it's done. But
it's done with computer, for one thing. I mean, they're using computers to do this whole thing. It's not like somebody goes in and fills out paperwork and says, I need a check.
So the money gets sent, and I guess that explains why the hard drives that were in the World Trade Center had an inordinate amount of transactions going on very early in the morning of September the 11th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, now Misters Hawkins and McConnell keep mentioning Clinton Rubin. And then they're involved. You know, you have the Wantagate scandal and the recently missing $14 trillion that made its way to Dubai.
That figures.
And this is done on a number of different computer systems that they have. They show one thing to the rest of the world, and they're using other computers, other screens, other. Or just back doors into the same computers and moving the money around at will.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Absolutely incredible.
People, there are researchers who are finding evidence that not only did they profit on the splintering to death of the people in the World Trade Center, but that they find some way to scheme money by... knowing who's going to die in a plane crash and dealing in some kind of insurance scam. Is it a scam?
Of course it's a scam.
Yeah.
You know, if insurance companies, and I'm sure that they're getting a portion of this too, you see, because normally an insurance company pays out to a particular victim. You know, when you have a car accident you're covered. You get paid. And if it's the fault of the person who ran into your vehicle, then they go after that person
and the person's
insurance company to get the money. So they tell you, we're taking care of you, but you may not even see them turn around and sue. They're at each other's throats.
Incredible.
And so in these cases, how do you get an insurance company to put that money out? Well, they get a windfall take, I would presume. Mm-hmm. And should I say that? No, not our insurance company. Well, look at AIG, for example.
Oh, my goodness. Yes,
there's a perfect example.
Yeah, this is it. And so between issues of Madoff, which I just met someone that lost $200,000, a little old lady that did, between that and the multi-trillion-dollar fraud, Zockheim and the $2.3 trillion, you have a lot of evidence that the money is laundered to the Zionist entity, which is a really illicit entity. So they're moving, quite frankly, quite a few trillions over the last 10 years, the 911 money as well. And I'm sure that the Ponzi scheme or the scam that your two guests
the Pontine,
the Pontine is going to lead directly to the Zionist entity. There's no doubt about it. Period. And I tell you something else: the two so-called Israelis that were on board were actually Beverly Eckert. In other words, this was a signal, and the other, what they meant by the second Israeli, was Alison DeForges. Those were the two that they had their sights on. Both were going to show Israeli involvement in mass murder. And they were dead set on prosecuting the criminals, who were responsible for these murders. And so they were killed.
And what?
I can guarantee you the Zionist cabal will not dispute that. They're just not going to do it. They may beat up on somebody or, sort of disparage them, but that's about it.
Yeah. Dr. K, we have a call. Would you like to take a call from one of our listeners?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we have on the line David from Washington. David, question or comment for Dr. K?
Am I on? Can you hear
Yes, we can.
Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, hi. Well, I sent both of you gentlemen a copy, forwarded something from a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the photograph David Hanshu took.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
Yeah, I heard you talking about it. You know what I had in mind? What I see when I read that stuff from him, is there someone that was scientific savvy can take a look at that, read what he says, his comments on that, and dispute it? You know, like the fire coming out, this is obviously not a, you know, the type of thing you're saying it is, or something he's trying to present.
Yeah.
Now, is there some way to put the kibosh on that?
Yeah, let me address that now, Dave.
Yes, thank you.
It's possible, definitely, to get a photographic expert and even an explosives expert. We could send that to Joenko. We could email that to Joenko and tell us what is this, and he's going to tell us that it's a cutter charge. He's the top explosives demolition company in Europe. So that's a good idea, because that letter is just that the fellow said is a rambling. Did you notice how it rambles all over the place?
Oh, I talk to him all the time.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yes. Okay. He's a friend. I didn't preface what I sent to you, Dr. K.
Oh, okay.
With a comment or anything. That wasn't from me. I didn't say that.
Oh, no, you didn't. Obvious that it was somebody that was trying to dispute us that he showed the picture to.
No matter what I talk to him about, any time. I'm trying to find that bottle where you take the top off and there's a little genie in there and get your
Well, I think that it's wise for you to say that, because it's not worth my time to say anything, but I wouldn't mind sending it to the top people and saying, you know, would you analyze this and tell us if this is a cutter charge? I think that's pretty good. It is what it is, so I would be more than happy to do that, and we shall do that, you know, and that once that's once we find the right people to send that to, and
yeah,
then I'll get that back to you.
I'd really like that, because I'd hand that right to him.
Yeah. You know,
out there doing your due diligence. I'm not going
to
respond to him. I will do what you suggested if I can find that person, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like to see to come off like Don Quixote or something, but swinging.
Well, there is an 80-20 rule, I must tell you, which is that, you know, you work with the people, the 20.
Yeah.
But since he's made such an imbecile out of himself, when I get a chance, I'll fire it off to this guy and say, would you mind giving us your opinion on this photograph, and see what he says.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a comment I'd like to make here. On several shows, not just on my show, but on some shows, for instance, that I've been on RBN, I've discussed the possibility that they used micro-nukes and the phenomenon that's seen in a lot of the material that ended up in the rubble pile, what was discernible, gave evidence of that. Brian Desborough, in his book, A Blueprint for a Better World, addresses the 9/11 attack in a very scientific way, and he makes a comment that I have often made, and I've talked to people that know quite a bit about nuclear weapons. They say that you can make a pretty powerful nuke out of a bomb the size of a piece of chewing gum.
Oh,
my
goodness.
We should consider the types of advanced technology that you don't necessarily see in a world war or out in a battlefield, or wonder, are they using these out on the battlefield? For instance, a Desert Storm. Did they use these in the first Persian Gulf War and prepare for this event accordingly? We don't know because we weren't there. But Brian brings up the same point. That there is substantial evidence that those types, or a whole potpourri of weapons, were used.
Well, you know, they didn't want those towers not to come down, and put the asbestos up to the 46th floor, and the issues of creating Greater Israel by saying, "Oh, those Muslims hit us." There were so many reasons. the fact that Rockefeller hated the towers. They wanted that real estate changed to something that was internet, you know, capacity that they could rent readily. The getting the insurance money because they were losing millions on the complex every year. But the big thing was to make it look like the Muslims hit us, so they could go ahead and get the military to get off of its, you know, flat feet and go into Iraq, go into Iran, and all that. Now, in that vein, you mentioned those nukes and so on. We did get a very strong report from the New York Daily Press, New York Daily News, where these people are getting thyroid cancers. So that's not common. You know, you don't get thyroid cancer from cement dust. You know, so something's going on down there.
Yes. Well, this individual named Sam, this is David's friend, says, where do the conspiracy buffs dig up these characters so profoundly ignorant of the science they are willing to comment on? Now, you calling this a science now? This is something that people learn in school and then go out and do for a living?
Isn't that something?
Okay. Yeah. So I can comment on his whole piece by that one sentence right there.
Yeah, sure.
And then I like his, I think it's very telling of his own thinking about himself, the following sentence that he wrote, where he says, ignorance becomes stupidity when the ignorant is offered the opportunity to learn the information, and principles for displacing the ignorance with truth, yet persists in his silliness. Very telling.
Yeah,
he's talking about himself. His own subconscious mind can't resist.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
See, here's another example of what we talked about, Dr. K, and I addressed this to you, David. Is that we address the issue of them attacking the messenger? You see, and what is he offering in terms of the science? He's using the word science, but what does he offer?
He offers, the pancake that doesn't pancake. He offers pancaking when there's no pancaking. It's a free fall. I mean, he's offering opposite of the truth.
He's talking about the air pressure from the pancaking buildings pulverizing the concrete walls.
I mean, it was so ludicrous. The only thing I could think is that he's from Massachusetts. I mean, he's got to be... it's got to be an indentured spy.
There is a thought that that just persists in my mind of exactly that.
You know,
and I can't believe that he is. But I mean, he's.
But if a spy was obvious, how could there be any spies? You know what I'm saying, David?
Right.
They're not going to
be always
just like in front of. You know, they're not going to walk around with a long trench coat after all and smoking something on a long stick.
And then, when the towers came down, then it's so fortunate and coincidental, I suppose you might say.
You know what you really should do is send him a picture of the towers coming down in a free fall and say, "Where's the pancakes?
Where's the pancaking?" Yeah. Well, I sent him the pictures you the devastation. What was that title of the from the new. Strewn wreckage. Yeah.
Oh, the straw. You say, "Oh, that's good." No, that's a good idea. Let's see what he comes up with that.
Yeah, that's all.
Is he going to talk about how you know you can eject a engine, from 1,000 feet in the air, and then the scaffolding self heals and the canopy self heals? I mean, what's
falls
going to do
down right onto the sidewalk. The tire's still inflated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't even hurt the sawed-off end of the axle there.
Yeah, sure, 45-degree angle, make it easy. Don't let your hacksaw get caught.
Well, I'm eager to see what he has to say about that.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
You'll find this interesting.
Yeah.
You'll find this interesting, David, and you, Dr. K. Under his name, there's an individual 108 years old and one 110.
Under his name, yeah. Yeah.
It fits the pattern of the other people that I've been looking at. So.
Oh my goodness.
Well, he is 70. He'll be 75.
Okay. Well, he's listed as 89, 72, 97, 70, 46, 74, 74, 54, 29, 110, 108.
Is he at, what university is this guy at that believes in pancakes and fairy tales?
Well, I think, what do you call him, the Masada, what?
He's in Massachusetts. Oh, okay, I didn't know.
Oh,
so Massachusetts, you know, of Tel Aviv, MIT, right?
It could very well be. He's right along with that Zionist agenda.
Yeah.
You can't even.
Well, David, thanks for coming up with that idea. I will not hesitate to get an expert to confirm that David Hanshu's photograph is what it is. I will do that. Yeah.
I listened to his. There's an interview, David Hanshu, with someone from the Art Institute in New York, where he is a member, was a past president, I think. I found that. It was just about a 21-minute interview with Stan. It was interesting. Very bright guy.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your call, David. Call in again.
Thank you.
Have a good evening. Well, there you go, Dr. K.
There we did it. Yeah, well, everybody's trying to spread this word,
mm-hmm.
and the easiest thing that I can fathom is that we keep building these arguments on the web, and you keep doing your research, and you keep showing that the people that we're hanging on to, like the eyewitnesses that saw planes and the relatives of people who died in the planes, as we find out that these people are phonies, it just helps that much more. I mean, for me, it was that guy Stanley Pramuth who said that the plane got stuck in his door of his so he hid under his desk in the World Trade Center because the wing, you know, from the 767 lodged in his wooden door. That's when I realized we were being, buffaloed.
Yeah. I heard Stephen Wallace mention, you know, how the plane basically, we're talking now about Buffalo again. The plane was virtually just melted, and the only thing that was discernible was a piece of a wing and then the tail section, which we saw in the photograph. But you remember I've been seeing the wing, first of all, in the original shots. And then later on they stopped showing that, and they showed the tail.
Yeah, that's true.
But what I saw fit what the Trujillo, Tomasita Trujillo, the 12-year-old girl, talked about.
Yeah, where she said that as it came down, one of the wings didn't have any fire on it. And, of course, Mr. Wallace said the same. He said that, hey, that wing, he was right up to it, and he saw the wires coming out and the color there and some writing. But now what's interesting is the fuselage was macerated. And I did get an email from some experts in the military, and I know that Mr. Bryant also confirmed this. And they were talking about how, when I don't know much about these things, but that these missiles, or whatever, they don't necessarily, the device or missile, they don't necessarily go to the engine. He was talking about how projectiles will knock out the fuselage. Remember you were talking about something directly hitting the front?
Mm-hmm.
The cockpit, disabling it. So there he kept, Mr. Wallace heavily emphasized the fuselage and the nose cone and all this stuff. There was nothing there. So whatever hit that apparently hit it in from the front and took the whole thing out immediately, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it just sort of spun around, bleh, you know.
So, yeah, well.
Whether
a
beam or projectile, I don't know.
Well, what they're describing, and again, this is David Hawkins and Field McConnell, is that Sidley Austin has the patents to these remote control technologies too.
Oh yeah,
that can take this over. You see, I even brought this up that normally if you're on autopilot and if you're having some kind of problem and the autopilot's not functioning, you switch to manual control.
Yeah.
And evidently, and this came out, that they had switched to automatic or from automatic to manual control and then back to automatic. Or
well, that means their problems were solved then, apparently. Unless it was automatic.
Not if it's overridden, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the point is this technology.
But the autopilot alone wouldn't take it down, would it, anyway?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's the remote-controlled devices that they use
yeah.
to do that.
Well, that's it. You know, you can do that. Bombs have been placed. We know that the an Operation Northwoods, that General Limnitzer and his group talked about putting a bomb on board, a C-130, and then remote detonating it. So there you have it, people. And that would be to create a war with Cuba by making a fake plane crash and make it look like the MiGs shot it down, all of that. So there you go. The technology has been available to remote detonate, a moving vehicle. Whether that or whatever you want it to be, it doesn't matter. The point is that unfortunately and sadly, and that's why the word has to get out, nothing could be more cruel. Mrs. Eckert already went through enough cruelty. Nothing could be more cruel than to plot to kill her after she was on the phone with her husband while he dropped down into the bowels of that short-term hell. She's talking to him. He's dropping through the floors when the building was demolished. Enough. It's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Enough criminality. This is not what this earth is for. This is to worship our Lord, to have peace, to bring peace amongst each other. And if, you know, somebody's different, what do we care? We can still be neighbors. We can still be friends.
Yeah, not with these people.
I wouldn't think.
You know?
I wouldn't think.
No.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. K, we're out of time.
Yeah.
It's been a fascinating show. I really enjoyed your show this evening on RBN. I encourage
yes.
folks that want to follow up and hear firsthand account of a witness that totally disputes the mainstream spin. And described his difficulties in dealing with the mainstream
media. It was a
media.
Heartfelt well, exposition by the chap, and thanks God for Mr. Nikoloff for following up with it. You take care.
Okay, and you're going to be on next week, too, so I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, we'll talk then.
All right, you have a good
bye
evening.
Bye. You too. Bye.
Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Dr. Kasim Khalil. Dr. K's website, knowledgehousepublishers.com, is the place to go to get his books. I highly recommend you get Wrongly Blamed. That book is going to blow your mind. And you can also go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on books. You'll find an index page there. There are a slew of books that I recommend. And Dr. K's books are there. Just click on Wrongly Blamed. It'll take you right there. I wrote up a little review on it, and the link to Dr. K's site is there. You can order the book directly from him. Special thanks go out to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, let's not forget David for calling in. Thank you, David. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Tell your friends about the show if you enjoyed it. And in the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.